And welcome back, everybody, to the Hangout in the Holy Land, the official podcast of LandGrantHolyLand.com, your official premier resource for all things Ohio State news and Ohio State athletics. I am your intrepid host, Matt Brown. You can find me at MattSBN on the Twitters, and you can find our program, of course, our website, rather, at LandGrant33. The Hangout in the Holy Land can be found on iTunes. It can be found on Blog Talk Radio. It can be found all over our site. We have a little grouping for all of the podcasts. So we encourage you, if you're new, you're welcome. Thank you. And it's not hard to find the rest of the podcasts. It's good to be back here. I've been gone the last several days, going back to Chicago for Big Ten Media Days, which I'm sure we'll discuss here in a little bit more detail. We're recording this here on Tuesday in the evening. Typically, we record these shows from the studios within the SB Nation's corporate headquarters in Washington, D.C., but for a couple of reasons, we had to do things a little bit differently, so we're talking here from my apartment, which is why things might sound a little bit weird. And for God's sakes, like, nobody wake up the baby. Because whenever I'm recording something here and it's at my apartment, we're always rolling the dice because you never know. Any minute now, we could hear some wailing, and then that's just going to be that. We tried to do this earlier today, and my daughter would not cooperate. Being a dad is really just the worst. So we're not here to be complaining about being a dad or complain about the things that happen with babies. At least we're probably not. We're here to talk about Ohio State, and quite a bit has happened today. And so joining me is one of our newest contributors here for Land Grant. I have my friend Harry Lyles here here to talk about what's going on here with the latest news. Harry, what's good, buddy?
What's going on, Matt?
Hey, it's good. Everything's quiet. Before we get into all the nitty gritty here. I want to ask you about something that you had mentioned in our newsroom, and I think it's extremely important that every single one of our listeners hear this because it's going to make me, in particular, sound cooler by association. I understand that very recently you finished a large feat of physical strength. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, would you mind just real quick refreshing or letting our listeners know what you managed to do? I understand it involves you picking up something heavy.
Yes, this morning, in fact, and we are recording this on a Tuesday, I accomplished the feat of joining the 300-pound bench press club.
This means that you can beat up, I think, literally every other sports blogger on the internet.
I think I can. I really think I can. I think there's very few and far between that perhaps have the strength that I hold.
No, like it's not even close. Look, I mean, I spent the last couple of days here with a bunch of other writers at this gigantic, you know, convention center in Chicago, and if we were to ask, bro, do you even lift? The answer for most of us, is no, unless we're talking about another beer. that's great. Another reason for all of you to be paying attention here to Land Grant Holy Land, the most physically fit and strongest and most dangerous Ohio State blog on the entire internet.
Of course.
so Harry, a bunch has happened today, which is, you know, kind of strange here for a random Tuesday in August before the start here of fall camp. First, Ohio State adds another commitment today. They move back up to 19 after Terrell Hall, a high four-star defensive end from right in my backyard here in D.C., decommitted. But now Ohio State's back up to 19 with offensive lineman Gavin Cupp, a composite three-star joining the Buckeyes here. Harry, my understanding is that Cupp has a little bit of a unique story here to get to Ohio State. For those who are not following recruiting into the nitty-gritty, are you familiar with how he ended up here in Columbus or the twists and turns that got him here?
Yes, I know that basically he was committed to Michigan State and Ohio State's premier recruiting event, Friday Night Lights. He attended, and thereafter, his scholarship was basically pulled from Michigan State, and then the news came out today that he, in fact, committed to Ohio State.
Yeah, that seems pretty unusual to me. I mean, I understand that this happens in recruiting occasionally, where someone's offer or scholar commitment is pulled based on something that the prospect did that had nothing to do with grades or illicit activity, you know, taking visits or whatnot. But I can't off the top of my head recall something like this happening at Michigan State, or a comparable program here. Can you?
No, I really can't. And honestly, the only thing that I can somewhat draw a parallel to it is what happened in the NBA offseason with DeAndre Jordan, where it almost seemed that, okay, if you are committed to a program such as Michigan State and you're attending a camp like Friday Night Lights at such a great institution that Ohio State is, it's almost like, okay, are you really that committed to Michigan State if you are, in fact, at this event? And I'm sure that's kind of that kind of drew Michigan State the wrong way, and eventually that's what made them withdraw their scholarship.
Sure. I can only hope that this recruitment situation involves somebody being barricaded in their house and lots of lots of canes or Popeyes coming in there and maybe right. playing spades. Like,
yeah.
weird stuff happens in recruiting. Maybe I'm irredeemably biased when looking at this here, but it seems to me that it would be kind of unfair to penalize a guy for it wasn't like an official campus visit or anything. It's a camp. Even if you were really committed to Michigan State, at the very least, you know, the guy, listen, I want to go and get a chance to get additional coaching and compete against some people that we're going to see in conference play. You know, obviously, I don't have the full picture, but from looking like that, it seems like this was maybe a little bit of an overreaction on Michigan State's part.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I mean, it's even like a lot of these pro athletes that you'll hear them say, okay, well, I want to be a free agent because I didn't necessarily have a recruiting process when I was younger because either they were so talented that they committed early or that they just hadn't experienced that. So I know if I was in that, you know, man's shoes, I would want the same thing. I would want to get all the coaching I could get. I want to get all the experiences I can get because in turn, I mean, you would think that that would make you a better player. So
yeah. Yeah. And plus, you know, the kid's from Ohio and you don't get that many opportunities, especially if you're not playing for Ohio State, to suit up in the shoe under those lights. It's a big thing here for anybody.
Absolutely.
So Cup right now, he comes in as like his full composite rating on 24/7 is a .8625. That makes him the second lowest rated recruit outside of the punter, Drew Chrisman, in this class. He's ahead of Kareem Felder, who is, you know, while also kind of considered by many who follow recruiting to be a little bit under the radar. Cup, Ohio State's obviously the biggest offer that he got. A bunch of interest from MAC schools, a lot of other schools in the Big Ten, Pitt, Missouri, and obviously the aforementioned here, Michigan State. 6'5", 270, from I believe a smaller high school program within the state. But I don't know about you. Cup's offer and commitment, well, not the commitment, but the offer surprised me a little bit, not because I don't think Cup is good enough to play for Ohio State, but Ohio State, I might be wrong on this, but I believe took about 47 offensive linemen in the last class. Seems like playing time might be kind of hard to handle, hard to get either way if you're not some gigantic five-star prospect. But, you know, I guess you can never have too many good offensive linemen, huh?
Yeah, that does seem interesting, but I definitely know this as a longtime Ohio State fan. I would not pick against Urban Meyer's recruits because we have been on the wrong side of that debate before.
No, that's true. If Ohio State staff sees something, you know, in him, by all means, like they have deserved the benefit of the doubt. Even for players that were kind of mid three-star prospects, several of them under Urban Meyer have become very important championship pieces. You know,
yes.
Darren Lee, of course, the most famous. I'll bring this up forever because I don't want to hide from instances when I've been a complete idiot, and I very distinctly remember talking to Luke about it. And you think, oh, this is a quarterback from New Albany. I went to high school really just kind of down the road from New Albany. I know that program. Like, we weren't sure what position he's going to play. It's not that mm-hmm. great of a high school program where he may have only faced four or five Division I kids his whole senior year. And I thought, that kid is never going to play for Ohio State. And Luke agreed, but was much less resolute than I was. Like, I was certain. Like, this dude is going to be at Central Michigan in 2 years.
And, right.
I'm not a smart man, as I think the important takeaway here from this. We kind of mentioned this here before with Hall leaving, you know, a big time defensive end that's decommitted from Ohio State. It seems there's some kind of conflicting reports about this, but it seems that he hasn't completely ruled out Ohio State yet, at least not on paper. But Alabama seems to be the favorite at this point. Do you think this is a huge loss for Ohio State?
I wouldn't necessarily say it's a huge loss. Obviously, you don't like to lose any big-time recruits. But at the same time, you know, and we can go back to this for decades. I mean, when you are a program of Ohio State's caliber, You have a coach like an Urban Meyer, and you have one of the most, if not the most attractive programs in the nation. I think you can afford to lose one or two of those guys, because even as we've seen, the team coming into this season is absolutely loaded with talent. And the guys that were backups last year have yet another year of experience to get underneath their belt, watching these other guys in front of them, you know, hopefully continue to dominate into this upcoming season.
Sure, sure. I would have, you know, as a fan, I would love to have Hall with the program. I hope that he makes whatever decision he feels is best for him. I think he'll be able to get a great education either way. I'm not going to be one of those people. I will say, though, that in addition to really being loaded for the couple of classes here before, Ohio State signed Nick Bosa and Jonathan Cooper. And one's already a composite five-star, and the other one's a 247 five-star. You can get that composite one if Gahanna has a good season this year. So not to say that Ohio State doesn't need him or anything. Obviously, it would be an asset, but it's just a stinking loaded defensive line class.
Absolutely.
So if you're going to lose one guy here, I think you could afford to lose him there. Like, you know, losing an Austin Mack, or some defensive backs, or losing Tuff Borland or something. I think that would hurt more in this class than losing a lineman.
Definitely.
The other big thing that happened, at least that we were made aware of today, which is unfortunately much, much sadder news, is that Ohio State baseball's pitcher Zach Farmer, who had been battling leukemia, tragically lost that fight. He has passed away. There was an event at Ohio State's baseball stadium this evening for him. Really, I mean, he was only 21 years old, somebody who came into that program with professional aspirations and a professional pedigree, and had pitched well, and there was some optimism earlier on because he had been in remission that he might be able to rejoin the program, and that's unfortunately not the case. Just a terrible tragedy. And our thoughts and prayers go out to his family and the greater Ohio State baseball family.
Yeah, you hate to see that. You know, he'd been battling it for the past 15 months. And, you know, hopefully he can inspire somebody else that, you know what, hey, even though he was battling this, he was still putting everything he had out onto the field. You know, from what people have been saying, it sounds like he was a great person. And, you know, his memory is definitely going to be living on within the program and, you know, for forever.
Yeah. You know, so I reached out to the Ohio State baseball program this afternoon about the arrangements or any particular causes here. But I do know that the Ohio State baseball team, along with Farmer, had been adamant over the past year of helping to promote bone marrow donations and being able to figure out if you're a match and be able to assist other people who may need those. And so you know, that would be something that we would encourage those who have the interest and are medically able to do to look into doing so. And once we have other information about other ways to be able to help the family or other medical causes that they support, we will certainly share those on the website.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. It's sad news here that it was picked up here throughout, you know, not just Ohio State, all throughout the Big Ten. Players and coaches were sharing their condolences. It was a part of Randy Johnson's Hall of Fame speech. He reached out to him. It's very sad, but it's a testament to the kind of life that was led here that inspired a lot of people and a lot are are reaching out and sharing those connections after this tragedy.
Yes, absolutely. Hopefully, you know, he has inspired others, definitely, without a doubt. And, you know, eventually with all the, you know, donations and things of that nature, you know, one day we will have a cure.
Well, hopefully. Listen, I know better than I know. I mean, I know like a lot of families do, not better, but like a lot of families, the destructive power of cancer. It's yes. Unfortunate, but hopefully you're right. Hopefully the medical research will continue to progress, including at great institutions like at Ohio State and their James Cancer Research Center, which has been an invaluable tool.
Yes.
That's all the big stuff here that happened today. But I've been a little bit out of the loop here myself over the last couple of days because I've had my head down here at media days and missed kind of being able to follow Twitter or some of the other things that were going on. Over the last week, when I was, you know, at McCormick Place Convention Center, Harry, was there anything else that I missed? Like any other big news or anything else here that other people might have missed if they had the audacity to spend time with their family and loved ones and stepping away from their phones?
you know, really the only thing that happened was, and you were able to catch it because it happened right before Media Days, was the suspensions that had come out prior to Media Day with Bosa and the other, you know, Buckeye players. And I, what do you think about the reaction coming from that? Because I know definitely within, you know, Buckeye Nation, at first it was like, you know, oh my gosh, is this really happening? But then at the same time, it's like, hey, you know what? This team is stacked. They're experienced. We got a great leader in Urban Meyer. Like, we're going to be all right. And even though Virginia Tech, you know, might have a great, you know, defensive backfield, we will be able to handle anything. What do you think about the reaction across the board?
Yeah, so that was actually happening right as I got to Big Ten Media Days. I think that was on. I think that was Thursday.
Yes.
Before Urban Meyer spoke, that was kind of breaking, and we talked to a couple of other journalists about it. I need to think about it a little bit more. I still think Ohio State's probably going to be able to beat Virginia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
But excuse me, I don't think these are insignificant losses, at least as a whole. Dontre Wilson, from what we had been hearing, may not have been a lock to play in that game anyway, just because of he may not be totally healthy. Just to say nothing of the fact that the H-back position is perhaps the most loaded on Ohio State's entire roster. Or at least, you know, it was before here.
Right.
But losing Jalen Marshall and Corey Smith, I think, is significant because those are the two wide receivers who on Ohio State's roster right now are the best, in my opinion, vertical threats.
Yes.
Especially Marshall, which seems to, you know, in my opinion, I think, play more into the Cardale Jones game of being able to test, to be able to have the arm strength to go deep and to be able to test corners that way. And when you lose all of those, those three players here, one, I think that means there's a good chance we're going to be seeing more Braxton Miller at H-back than maybe we would have otherwise. But Virginia Tech's secondary is really good. There may not be five secondaries better than the entire country. So that's a difficult test here for Michael Thomas, who is going to be the one wideout who has the most experience, and he's probably going to get Kendall Fuller on him, and will really have to get open.
Oh yeah,
and it's going to put some pressure on some of the rest of Ohio State's more unproven young wideout talent. Curtis Samuel, I think, is probably going to have to play a big game there. He's going to be able to get a lot of touches. There's still a lot of speed. There's a lot of good Ohio State wide receivers, but if you're trying to break in a bunch of new guys, you're trying to break in a Paris Campbell, you're trying to break in a Terry McLaurin, you're trying to break in some of these other guys, a Johnny Dixon, there's few teams that I want to do that less than Virginia Tech. And we saw what that defense was able to do last year to an Ohio State offense that was young in many positions and trying to break in some new guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I really think that we are really going to see what Mike Thomas is made out of. We saw some flashes out of him last year, especially, you know, he made the one spectacular catch against Alabama. And I think we'll really be able to see what he's capable of, because I really believe he's going to need to have a good game against Virginia Tech to at least keep Buckeye fans, you know, comfortable.
Oh yeah, if he, you know, goes two catches for 11 yards or something like there, it's pretty easy to envision a scenario where Ohio State loses.
Yeah,
losing Bosa is also obviously a really big deal because I'm not sure that the interior depth along the defensive line is a major strong suit for Ohio State, and being able to have somebody who can eat up double teams, who has to be schemed for on every play, that gives the rest of Ohio State's front a lot more flexibility. And I think that they're still going to be able to be disruptive and get a good pass rush even without him, but this does make things hard. You know, if Ohio State has a camp where they're going to be missing, you know, a couple other guys get hurt or suspended, then we're looking at a really difficult game, or an even more difficult game, one they could potentially lose, because that's a really tough place to play. And even though Virginia Tech's offense might still suck, the secondary is really good at creating havoc. And you know, if you're going to throw everybody in the box and dare Ezekiel Elliott to beat you, he can, but it's not going to be comfortable.
Yeah, I think the biggest part of the Bosa loss, I almost compare it to him almost as an Ndamukong Suh or a J.J. Watt, to where their skill and the attention that they draw makes everybody else around them better. And they haven't played without him, you know, in a long time. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle that. It will really be able to see what kind of talent we have outside of Bosa on the defensive line.
Yeah, there's players on that line to be excited about.
Yes.
And, you know, I had a chance to talk to Adolphus Washington a little bit about it at Media Days. And you know, I don't think you were expecting him to say anything differently, but he's like, but he talked a lot about some of these young guys, how they're going to be ready. Had a lot of high praise for Sam Hubbard, who's kind of been penciled into, like, I feel like eight different position groups while he's at Ohio State. Now he seems to be on the defensive line and really just a physical freak of a kid.
Yeah.
He's probably going to see some time. You know, the Ohio State wants to play a deeper rotation there anyway. Would, you know, as a fan, would I feel a little bit more comfortable if this was happening against a MAC team or Hawaii? Like, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
But if Ohio State's still able to come out here with a win, with missing those players, that's just going to help their depth even more later in the year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I remember the other thing that I heard about a little bit later was there were a bunch of rumors as I was kind of leaving about a potential black uniform for Ohio State that might wear later in the year. Did you see this? What do you think about that as a concept, independent of any pictures that you've seen? What do you think about the idea of Ohio State wearing a black uniform?
Independent of any pictures I have seen, I wouldn't necessarily count it out. I'm kind of, in terms of, with Ohio State and with like other teams in the Big Ten, such as a Penn State or a Michigan, I don't necessarily like the uniforms tweaked with a lot, because I think they're some of the best in the country. You know, they look great. But if you do a black uniform, there are ways to do it right. Like when the University of Georgia broke them out, I think back in 2008 against Alabama, I thought those looked really nice. And then, you know, there's wrong ways to do it. And I would kind of say Maryland, but they're kind of all over the place, obviously. But
yeah,
I think that if they really, you know, could do it and put some thought and effort into it, obviously with the help of Nike, I think that they could do well with a black uniform.
I am of the opinion, again, independent of any pictures, I think it could look kind of cool.
Yeah.
Ohio State, like, black isn't technically an Ohio State color, but it is something that's, you know, it was on part of the uniforms during the championship run. It's been a part of Ohio State merchandise. It's not like they're busting out like green. It's not a completely foreign color to the scheme. There's a lot of ways where you could do it. I think that where it'll look sharp, particularly, you know, against Penn State, for example, which is a night game. You know, that's the team that always whites out Ohio State. That could be a fun visual thing. Perhaps later in the year could work as well. And you know, we've been told that this is exciting for recruits. This helps amplify the atmosphere around Ohio State. And undoubtedly, they'll sell a gajillion of them. Which, I mean, great. It's, you know, money for the program, because Ohio State's one thing. It's poor. That's a good thing too. So, like, in the abstract, I'm not so much of a traditionalist that I'm against that idea. I will say, and I think you've seen this picture too, that there was a picture that was floating around Twitter of a potential prototype or something.
Yes,
it's a T-shirt that's being sold, and there was a rumor or report, but that's the design. I'm interested to hear what you think, but I'll say this: for my opinion, I think those are ugly as hell.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you on that. I don't think that the shirts would probably do the actual uniforms justice, but that's not to say that I would agree with that uniform concept. And I also find it hard to believe that Nike would release that line of T-shirts in terms of saying, okay, we're going to be releasing these black uniforms, without specifically saying that, okay, these teams are going to be wearing these uniforms. Because as we've seen them do in the past, whether it be basketball or football, they draw the line, you know, and reveal all the team's uniforms like they did in the college football playoff for Oregon, Alabama, and, of course, Ohio State.
Yeah, I agree on all those fronts. I would be personally extraordinarily surprised if whatever alternative alt uniforms Ohio State wears this season look like the T-shirts that have already come out. That doesn't seem like how Nike would typically do the release. There were other schools in that that were listed there, and some of those schools, like Oklahoma, have already denied that they're participating.
Yes.
I also reached out to Ohio State for comment about this. So far, there has been no comment, but I would, my prediction, and we heard some chatter about this, you know, a couple of months ago, I think Ohio State is going to wear a black uniform this year. probably against Penn State, potentially some other, not against Michigan, but potentially at some other time. But I think it's going to be a completely different design. If you look on our website, I think this was last year, there was like a picture of an all-black uniform with like black pants and a black shirt.
Yes.
That was on Urban Meyer's like desk.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's the one, but I would guess whatever Ohio State ends up wearing will be spiritually closer to that. The kind of red-black jersey situation here.
We can only hope.
Yeah. I mean, like, hey, if that's the thing, then, people complain about it, and they'll click on our website, and
right.
that'll be a big story. But I would be very surprised. Like, that feels like some kind of Baylor-ish to me.
And
that's not really where Ohio State's going.
Not at all.
Yeah. I think that was most of the big things here. I shared most of my insights from Big Ten Media Day. I think we published four or five articles from last week. The bigger stories in terms of just like broad news. One, Big Ten Network is going to be debuting a behind-the-scenes documentary-type program around Ohio State's training camp. It will air, I believe, starting the 19th. It's called Scarlet and Gray Days. There'll be three, potentially four episodes. I had a chance to talk to the Big Ten Network president about the show. I understand that a lot of people are referring to this as like Hard Knocks Ohio State, and BTN was like super adamant and clear that they want to dial back those expectations. Hey, we can't get the same kind of access that the NFL does for Hard Knocks. Like, I'm not sure they're going to go shove a camera in front of a kid's face as he's crying because he's like fourth string or he tore his ACL or something. I'm going to guess there's going to be less profanity if there is on Hard Knocks, because Big Ten Network is not HBO.
Right.
Yet. I think the principle of this sounds pretty cool. Like, the people who are doing it do the Journey. Like, I don't know about you. Like, I don't really even watch TV that much. I think the Journey is a really good show.
Yeah.
As far as Big Ten kind of non-live game programming is concerned. And it's not like Ohio State is lacking for storylines heading into that first game.
Yeah, I think that would be pretty neat, especially because it sounds like it's going to be something close to what ESPN did with Kentucky basketball.
That's right.
And I believe that gave people a really good insight as to John Calipari and his coaching style. And I think it kind of settled, some thoughts that people had about him that weren't necessarily true. And I think it would kind of be interesting for people to see maybe a side of Urban Meyer that they hadn't seen before behind the scenes, maybe how some of the workouts go, things of that nature.
That's a good point. I know Urban Meyer not that long ago did an HBO segment that kind of showed a different side there, but this might be, I think, for a football fan, it's a chance to get to know the rest of that staff a little bit better, to get a chance to understand the kind of the blood and guts of what training camps actually like at a high level, and certainly any kind of extended exposure for Ohio State is a good thing for recruiting, because 15, 16, 17 year olds are watching Big Ten Network over the summer too, so it's difficult to see how there could be really any negative associated with Ohio State for this.
And yeah, definitely.
I wouldn't be surprised if next year BTN does this again with a different program.
Yeah, I think it's a great move.
Yeah. The other big piece of news that, aside from some of the specific interviews here, was Commissioner Jim Delaney for the Big Ten talking about a new scheduling format that will go into effect next year, sort of. The TLDR version here is that every Big Ten team is going to have to play a Power 5 team, Notre Dame or BYU, every season. That next year, the Big Ten will go to 9 conference games, which means that Ohio State will have 3 out-of-conference games instead of 4, and that they can't play FCS teams anymore. Supposed to go into effect for 2016, but like half the Big Ten has an FCS team scheduled for 2016, which like it seems kind of strange. I wouldn't be surprised if like one or two of those drop, but like as we learned recently, it's awful hard to find an FBS team to replace an FCS one on such short notice. So I think a lot of those will stay. I don't know if that means a whole lot for Ohio State. Ohio State's got a Power 5 team scheduled every year, and sometimes two. Until like 2024, there's always Oklahoma coming up. There's TCU. There's Oregon. There's Texas. There's Notre Dame. There's Boston College. There's a one-off game against Oregon State. Wouldn't be surprised if Ohio State buys another home game with the lower P5 team. Plus, you've got Cincinnati. That's gonna be in there. Potentially, some other solid teams. So it doesn't matter a whole lot there. Might matter for a couple other teams here in the league. And if you're tired of watching like Illinois State, congratulations. Now for the Big Ten noon game, you get to watch like probably Kansas, you know.
Right.
a team that's just as bad. What did you think about this?
I think it's interesting. I know when, you know, the discussion of the college football playoff was coming up that this was eventually going to be a thing. And I think it's interesting for the game. I think that it'll help end the discussion of, you know, some of those early weeks or even sometimes during the middle of the season where it's like, oh my gosh, like, you know, why is Alabama playing Florida A&M? Like, they're going to beat them 99-0. Or even my alma mater, Georgia State, why is Alabama playing them? Or Ohio State? So I think it'll be interesting. I think it'll benefit the Big Ten because you really have no way to go but up. Because for your bottom tier teams scheduling, you know, a lot of these FCS schools, you really just you're gonna have to step your game up, and you know, hopefully we see things, you know, from the better, more, you know, we see better things from the teams lower in the conference.
Yeah, I definitely think that we're gonna see some stuff there. Sorry about that. I just tried to pull up Ohio State's 2016 schedule, and I got a little bit of an autoplay ad popping up in the background. The other interesting thing to keep in mind, and this is something that I think fans will enjoy, is the 9-game schedule means that Ohio State is going to see the good teams in the Big Ten West more often.
Yes.
This year, you know, just like last year, Ohio State draws Illinois and Minnesota. Minnesota is like, you know, should be a decent team again this year, or at least that's what kind of people are projecting. Illinois, yeah. Less so. But next year, Ohio State draws both Wisconsin and Nebraska and Northwestern. Northwestern, I mean, I have no idea how good Northwestern's going to be next year. You probably don't either. But right. Wisconsin, Nebraska should probably be pretty decent. And the chance having three of those will mean that the odds of getting one of those two teams a year is going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, Ohio State has a road trip to Oklahoma and plays Bowling Green and Tulsa next season. So that will be a good thing. You know, certainly with trying to build up a strong schedule here for the playoff, the Buckeyes will have an increased opportunity to do that.
Yes.
I don't think there's anything else here on my mind. Did you have anything else here that you wanted to talk about?
Not so much. I know. Let's say you let off the second day of Media Day. Was it Kyle Flood, I believe?
Trying to remember here who was first. The second day, I don't think Kyle Flood was first. It might have been.
I think it might have been Jerry Kill.
It was Jerry Kill. Jerry Kill was first. That's right. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting, and you know, we won't discuss it necessarily too much because I believe we might go into it more on the site. But in terms of the bottom half of the Big Ten, it's kind of interesting to see where some of these coaches stand. And I will just say this one in particular. I think, as far as Kirk Ferentz goes at Iowa, I think his job will depend on how Mike Riley does at Nebraska and how Wisconsin moves on from Anderson. I think that'll be interesting because his buyout is not huge anymore, and if there's a falling out. Or a decline in either one of those programs. If Iowa is not the team in the conference to step up, I think they might show them the door.
I really have no feel at all for what the Big Ten West is going to be like next season.
It's tough.
I don't really like any of the teams. Like I think we could probably agree that Wisconsin, Nebraska are probably the top two.
Yeah.
There's parts of both of those teams that I like, but I think I like Michigan and Penn State more than either of them.
Yeah.
But then there, like, I think we both agree, at least I think Purdue's at the bottom, but you could talk me, and I think, into any order there. You want to tell me that Iowa's third, which is, I think, what I voted or what I said before because their schedule's a little bit easier? Like, okay,
yeah.
Sure. If you want to tell me that Iowa, you know, is going to have inefficient quarterback play and they won't be explosive on offense and they won't be able to play from behind, sure, they could go 5-7. I have their schedule up right now. They got, you know, they got an FCS team to open the year. Illinois State's pretty good, but they should still beat Iowa. Should still beat them.
Yeah,
they have a road game at Iowa State, which is a team that Ferentz has really struggled with the past couple of seasons.
Mm-hmm.
They could lose. They probably won't, but they could. They host Pitt, who could beat them. Like that's an actual football game there. They should beat North Texas. But then you got at Wisconsin. That's probably a loss. You And you had to go at Nebraska, and you're probably going to lose that game too.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Minnesota and Maryland and Illinois are all at home, but, like, you know, they could go 2-3 in those games. Like, it's easy for me to, like, kind of see a road where they might go 7-5.
Yeah.
Or they could be worse than that. But the thing with Iowa is that, like, the energy from that program has kind of diminished. They got this, like, a truly beautiful state-of-the-art football facility there.
Mm-hmm.
They have a big stadium. There's a fan base that has a long history of caring, and people are there's no momentum there. The recruiting has sucked in this class.
Yeah.
You're right. I think they definitely have to do something.
Something's got to happen.
Something's going to happen. And for what it's worth, Iowa historically under Kirk Ferentz has tended to do a little bit better when expectations are low. Expectations were kind of high last year because everyone was like, wow, Iowa's schedule sucks. They should win 9 games. And then, you know, they definitely didn't. And right. Now people are like, well, you know, Iowa hasn't had a running back blow out his ACL in a while. And that's kind of like the only thing. So I'm not saying this will happen, but it would be very Kirk Ferentzian of him to go win 8-9 games and then be sticking around for another 4 years.
Right.
Yeah. I have no idea. I'm sure we're going to talk about that a little bit more. I wouldn't say that he's necessarily the most on the hot seat, even if the wheels kind of fall off. I think it's like $9 billion, which is not an insignificant amount of money. It's not right. Like the gross national product of like Spain, which is what it was like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
It's more manageable. But certainly Tim Beckman in Illinois, I think, is on the hot seat. His press conference was weird.
Very weird.
I kind of felt bad for him. You know, there's some really hard questions being thrown at him. Some of those are his fault. Some of them aren't. And he's dodging everything, and he's trying to smile. And his athletic department is falling apart a little bit right now under investigations. And even though that team's gotten better each year, it's difficult to find somebody who's really kind of bought into the Beckman era. You know, Daryl Hazel at Purdue probably has another year, but they've been real bad. And if, you know, they go win 2 games again and nobody goes, you know, there's no one's going to Purdue Stadium, maybe that forces hands a little bit. Northwestern's been underwhelming. Like, I don't know. All I know is that I think both of us are going to watch some pretty crappy 11 a.m. Central Big Ten West football games this year.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about that one.
Yeah. Well... Let's get excited for some terrible football, everybody. Let's. I think we can wrap up with that, and we'll have a lot more to look forward to. I know coming up here this week, we have some more recruiting articles that are coming up, and then Ohio State's camp starts next week, so we'll have some honest to God football to talk about. So with camp reports and depth chart updates and getting into a little bit more of the nitty-gritty forecasting Ohio State's first couple of opponents with Virginia Tech, Hawaii, Northern Illinois, and Western Michigan to start off the season. So you know, lots here to go check out. Be sure to be visiting landgrantholyland.com and finding us on Twitter at landgrant33. Like us on Facebook because we're posting a bunch of stuff on Facebook. Some of that stuff you can't even get on the site. Extremely useful. Harry, real quick, where can the good people on the internet find you and your work?
You all can find me on Twitter at Harry Lyles Jr. That's at HarryLylesJr. on Twitter. I will answer all your tweets and all that good stuff, and you need to stay locked in with Land Grant. I'm going to hopefully be here as long as I can.
You're definitely plan on him sticking around a little bit, everybody. I'm at MattSBN on the Twitter. You can shoot me an email, as always, matt.brown@sbnation.com. Everybody, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for listening, and go Bucks.